You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting marketing or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org. You can also pick up prior shows on the website, again, at wdiy.org. Just search for the show and look for the topic that would most interest you, and you can listen online. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today's February 19th, 2014. The markets were down today, the Dow closing at 16,040, the NASDAQ at 4237, and the S&P at 1828. Last week, we discussed tax returns and how to get ready and make the process more efficient. I'll do that again next week. In fact, I'll take your questions next week on taxes as well. Tonight, we're discussing legal consideration for same-sex couples as well as non-traditional couples. So this will apply to a lot of folks these days. Some of them may be your children, it may be your parents. So lots of good information tonight. Many planning issues around this and many planning issues that, in fact, would apply to us all. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, if you have questions that are off topic, you're still welcome to call. The number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. In the studio to help me this evening is attorney Kirby Upright from King Spry, Herman, Freund & Fall, LLC, right here in Bethlehem. Kirby Upright is both an attorney and a certified public accountant, as well as an accredited estate planner. His knowledge and experience in estate planning and estate administration have earned him the frequent honor of being called to lecture and commentate before his peers across the Commonwealth. He also holds the distinction of being a fellow in the American College of Trust and Estate Council, that's ACTEC, a prestigious organization to which only attorneys who meet certain exemplary standards are invited, and he is one of only two fellows in northeastern Pennsylvania and of approximately 1,500 across the nation. Kirby is also the editor of the Pennsylvania Bar Institute text, Legal Issues Affecting LGBT Clients. Big introduction there, Kirby. and I had to whittle it down from like an entire page.
Well, that's our marketing person, Kathy. She gets into all of that.
It's Kathy because she's a volunteer.
She's right behind me, so I had to give her a plug. Kathy's great, but it's a real pleasure to be here, Lori. You mentioned in the introduction the point of this being more than a discussion about LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, if you will, clients, and that's so true. A lot of what we're going to discuss relates just as much to a hetero couple that is not married. If you're not married, you have the same issues, and in fact, we'll probably get into the Supreme Court case Windsor. And if you're not married, Windsor doesn't apply. Windsor is really a same-sex marriage as accepted in whatever jurisdiction they're married. So we'll talk about that more, but I just want to emphasize to the audience that we're talking about more than just simply the LGBT issues.
And Kirby, I know, you know, you have been practicing law for some time, so I want you to talk to set the stage a little bit about your practice, but I also want to mention that you were really on the forefront of this. You and I have been having some recent conversations about this, and you say it's the flavor of the month a bit. And, You know, that's true. It's in the financial services industry and seminars that we are getting invited to, et cetera. You've been doing this for a long time already. So can you talk a little bit about your practice and then a little bit how you started with this?
Well, I'm a trust and estate lawyer with King Spry here in Bethlehem. Our practice involves estate planning, trust planning, trust and estate administration, orphans court litigation, all of those things. In fact, I'll be in Philadelphia tomorrow with a Pennsylvania Bar program, continuing education program, dealing with estate planning for estate and elder law symposium, if you will. The way I got involved in this, Lori, and I'll try to make this a short story, but back in the year 2000, and in 2000, no one was talking about this stuff. And I'm pleased to say that there's a lot more conversation today. But back in 2000, I had two ladies come in the office, and they had a pile of paper. I mean, if I said they had a foot pile of paper, and I started looking through all this stuff, and I saw something that said, referenced them as partners. And I said, does this partner reference mean the same thing to you that it does to me? And I think it was domestic partner to be. And they said, well, yes. Mm-hmm. And right then and there, I stopped the conversation. I said, I really don't know much about this, but can we make an appointment in 2 weeks? And I went back and went on the internet. I'm not the most techie person in the world, but in a little bit of research, I found myself all the way back, and some of us with gray hair would remember Lee Marvin and Michelle Marvin and the Marvin versus Marvin case and what was really a palimony case. But Lee and Michelle were not married, and she sued Lee for palimony at the time, if you remember.
Yeah.
Well, that was like one of the very few cases that dealt with a non-married situation. And it struck me that, oh, my goodness, there's nothing going on here. And I started to do more research and the such. These folks came back in, and we still have a relationship today some 15 years later. But the interesting thing, in talking to one of my secretaries, they told me, or told my secretary, how much they appreciated our effort, because first they went to a gay lawyer who knew nothing about estate planning. And they were very displeased with the transactions. They then went to an estate planning attorney who was not gay, and as soon as he found out that they were lesbians, he dismissed them from the office, which is really sad, and we could get into an ethical and professional discussion about that. And so as a result, we have become somewhat of friends, and I told you in preparation for this that one of the interesting things is just recently I got a call, because the one lady was estranged from her family. And she wrote me a letter. You could almost see the tears on the letter as she had been in contact with her daughter, and her daughter and her daughter's family was coming for Thanksgiving dinner. And this is after years of estrangement. So maybe these have opened, and these discussions have opened some doors. And if they have, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's great. So going back then, you started getting your arms around it, and then you became like the go-to person. I know in one of your presentations, you had said estate planning is probably far more important for the non-traditional couple. So let's start talking, maybe, if we can, about some of the basic rights that a married couple might have, and then how we can dovetail that into the non-traditional couple, whether it's a heterosexual couple or a same-sex couple.
Well sure. If you are a heterosexual married couple, first off, at death, you have what we call a family exemption. And if there's no will or nothing else, the surviving spouse has this right to a family exemption. It's an old traditional thing. It used to go back to sewing machines and, the agricultural tools and such. It's a number of $3,500. You can take it in cash. You can take it in property. More importantly, in terms of numbers, is folks out there may have heard of something called taking against the will. I'll be a little more technical. In the probate code, we call that a spousal election. And essentially, folks, you cannot disinherit your spouse. You can disinherit the kids, you can disinherit a lot of other people, but you can't disinherit your spouse, and therefore the spouse would have a right to elect against the estate, and in so doing would receive a minimum of one-third of the estate. If you didn't have a will and you were married, the spouse would still, the legislature in Pennsylvania has written a will for you. It's called the Intestate Act. And the Intestate Act essentially says that the spouse would get half, or if the children of the family or the children of the spouse as well as the decedent, then $30,000 plus half. So again, what you see is the married spouse, and we get into some common law, parens here, folks, common law is no longer recognized in Pennsylvania, but we're going to talk about common law for the next 40 or 50 years, because up until 2000, I think it was six, we were talking common law.
Right.
So, but common law is no longer there. But you're going to see things where, oh, well, we were married, but it was common law.
Kirby, I'm going to jump in right here. We've got to take a quick break. This conversation is going to go fast, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. And in the studio with me this evening is Kirby Upright. He's an attorney with King Spry in Bethlehem, and in particular, a trust and estate concentration in concentrating in trust and estate. Kirby, we were just talking about some of the basic rights that a married husband and wife couple, heterosexual, has in Pennsylvania in particular. Some of the basic rights, you said exemption, electing against the will, intestate rules in favor of a spouse, that if someone was not married, they would not have some of these basic rights. I want to give the phone number again, and then let me know if we have some more things to cover there. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So, Kirby, as far as some of those basic rights, what else do we have?
Well, I like to call it the old Geraldine Ferraro. You may remember her, mm-hmm. Congresswoman of some years ago. And she
ran
authored,
for vice president with Mondale.
She did, yeah. She authored a provision in the retirement code that you cannot change the retirement beneficiary from your spouse without your spouse's consent. So that's another little thing there that the spouse has that the non-married wouldn't. So let's roll back then. We've talked about the married couple. So if we go back to the non-married, the non-traditional couple, again, I want to emphasize, we're not talking about something that's limited to the gay lesbian community. We're talking about any non-married. Everything I've just said and said before the break is not relevant here. So you can disinherit your partner. Your partner has no right to claim against the estate, if you will. There's no will. You're not written into the will in any way. And we need to understand, and you see this. I mean, forget about the same-sex issue and Windsor and all that for a minute. You see that out there with folks who are living together and whatever, and then someone, and all of a sudden, well, I was with him for 30 years, and he owed me. Well, okay, fine. But that doesn't count, unfortunately. So it's really important that we address some of those issues in all of those non-married situations.
So let's talk about some of the estate planning documents that first any couple should have, and then why they're important to non-traditional couples in particular.
I find it easy with many clients, especially clients who have most or all of their assets in joint names. Now, they should have a will. Please, folks out there, don't think that I'm saying you don't need a will. But if everything is in joint names, it's going to go to the surviving spouse. That's a given. What becomes then more important is the power of attorney, what I'm going to call agency documents, because when you have a power of attorney, you name an agent. And that agent would be the person who, on a financial power of attorney, we like to call it an asset management power of attorney, you would be naming someone to manage your assets if you couldn't. As importantly is a healthcare power of attorney. I'm not talking about end stage here. I'm talking about simple healthcare, selection of doctors, nurses, hospitals, hospices, etc., if you could not make healthcare decisions for yourself. These are important documents. And then, of course, you can move from the health care into what folks in the community might call a living will, what I'm going to call, and a hospital would call, an advanced directive, basically addressing end-stage types issues. Now, these documents are important, and they're important, of course, if you are talking about a same-sex marriage or a heterosexual marriage. That doesn't matter. What really then, if we step from the married, where I said everything is in joint name, so it doesn't really wouldn't matter, when we get into a non-married situation, okay, let's put this in bold letters, underlined, capitalized, etc., you got to have a will, because we just said that there are no rights for that non-married partner. So now the will becomes hugely important. What are you leaving to that person with whom you have been maybe 30, 35, 40, or however long? In the non-married situation, and we could drill into this like really deeply in terms of like gifting, but what if you had a partner who is essentially fairly high net worth, making a good living and stuff, and the other partner is making a more modest living, and they buy a house together. But the house is only in partner A's name, and partner A dies. It's in partner A's name. Partner B may have been contributing half the mortgage, may have been contributing, household expenses. Go prove it. What about the car they just bought together, but it's in partner A's name? So all of these things, if you haven't documented this in some way, and the titled partner dies, you've got a problem. You've got a serious problem. So now the will and other documents, I address this all the time, but unfortunately I'm not always heard. But I encourage clients, regardless of their sexual orientation, to do a cohabitation agreement. Now, a cohabitation agreement sounds an awfully lot like a prenuptial agreement, except it gets into more specifically the types of property. If we buy property together, regardless of whose name's on the receipt or what credit card we used, is this going to be treated as 50-50 and whatever if something happens? By the way, partners, same sex, opposite sex, they get divorced too, okay? Except that, again, you have no documentation of that relationship other than how the property is titled. So some of these things can become really important in regard to the non-married partner, domestic partner situation. The will, as I said, then becomes hugely important. And then, of course, the power of attorney comes in. And one of the sad things that you see in these situations, especially now I am going to go to the same-sex relationship, the domestic partner becomes ill. He or she is in the hospital. The family comes in. They've been estranged. They don't like the other partner anyway, because that other partner turned this person in this other direction or something. That's silliness, of course, but it is what it is. They immediately remove the other partner. The partner who probably has had discussions about how I want to be treated, what doctors, what hospitals, what I want, what I don't, that's totally removed. And without a healthcare power of attorney, that other partner is without any authority to step in. You and I discussed the other day, in Pennsylvania, we have a healthcare power of attorney act, and there is a listing in priority of the people who would, if you didn't have a power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney, the people who would be able to, in priority, step in as a healthcare representative. That's a term of art within the law. You would have to go through a fairly long list of prioritized items before, really in default of everyone else, then a partner, a domestic partner, could step in. But, parents, children, and yada, 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 on down the list until we got. So that partner is at the bottom, not at the top, even though that partner may be the one person it's closest to, understands the wishes and desires, the priorities, et cetera. So the healthcare power of attorney, the asset management power of attorney, the will for sure, We'll talk maybe a little bit later about how we can title some assets and do some other things, a little more deeper planning than we just mentioned. But the will, certainly for sure, and I'd love to see more clients using a cohabitation agreement.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the planning around the asset titling along with the documents and how people may hesitate on doing some planning because they're not sure what they want to do. They're not sure maybe about whether they're ready to, you know, title assets a particular way. So we need to remove that stigma and get some good planning done and help people move forward with that. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
And we are back. Thank you, Jeff. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Personally, I love talking estate planning. So for me, it's like a thrill to have Kirby in the studio with me because I almost forget that we have listeners. So if you have questions, you're welcome to call. This is the time. We've got some great resources here, 610-758-8810. Right before the break, we were talking about in the first segment about basic rights that married couples have, heterosexual couples, and now we've moved into some of the non-traditional couples, which almost are becoming the traditional couple these days. Many people are choosing not to marry for, you know, and so we have a lot of non-traditional couples who still need planning. So we were just going over some of the documents that can help with capturing some benefits that we lose in the basic rights that a heterosexual couple might have. So some of the basic rights might be, you know, we purchase this property together, we're both living here, and now one of us dies, and whoops, we're not married, no one put my name on the title. How do we get around that? We can't inherit by intestate law, we can't elect against a will if we're not a spouse. So what documents can we use? And Kirby just went over the will, the power of attorney, which is a powerful document while you're alive, the living will and advanced directives for those healthcare decisions. We briefly touched on if a surviving partner might even be in the home. They may end up getting kicked out if the documents weren't done properly. What other documents might be important for a non-traditional couple besides the ones that you've already had a chance to mention?
Well, I suppose when you say documents, let's go, and again, we could go deeper, but another option might be to put certain assets into a trust, a revocable trust perhaps. It doesn't have to be irrevocable in nature, but a trust where we have titled maybe the house and some other things so that other greedy and perhaps estranged family members don't step in and say, well, this is ours through inheritance. Because the trust now says that my partner is going to be the beneficiary of that trust. Now, there's a lot of different ways to do that, and we can go a little more deeply. But anything that we can do to place assets in a way that it's automatic. Maybe, you know, I have a number of clients who have children from a prior relationship. And, you know, thank goodness most of those clients have good relationships with those children. And they want their children to inherit. But they have a partner, and they want to ensure that that partner is also taken care of. Well, I have a partner. She's been my wife for 38 years. There's life insurance. So one could have a document, be it a will or a trust or both, to provide for the children, but say, but I still want to take care of my partner. So I'm going to go out and buy $500,000 or $1 million worth of life insurance. I'm going to name my partner as the beneficiary. Now, the family can't step into that. That's a private contract between the life insurance company and the insured, an owner, if you will. And so that's kind of an automatic. Now, there's a lot of planning that could go beyond that. As you well know, we could use a life insurance trust. We could drop it in. We could take care of the partner for life with certain rights to invade principal for needs and things like that. And then at the end of the day, even the balance of that life insurance could fall to the children. So just one planning opportunity. But I said before, you know, another thing would be trust. So we want to be careful whenever we're commingling assets, and we don't think about it that way. I mean, of course, we're, you know, buying things together. But when we're in a non-married situation, you know, commingling can be a very bad thing without documentation as to who bought it, who owns it, how do we intend to it to pass, etc. So some of those things can be, as I said, can become very important. And let me just say to our audience that let's not assume that we're not going to die.
Right.
Because we are.
Yeah.
Okay. There, you know, we don't think that the two things that are certain, death and taxes, we're all terminal. And I'm not sure when, maybe sooner than later, but we are terminal. And so we need to address those things. I've had clients who really won't do a will. And they won't do a will because they think that, well, if I do the will, that acknowledges, you know, my mortality. Well, you are mortal.
Right.
So let's get past that. And now let's do the planning that we need to do. And for goodness sakes, folks out there, do not assume that somehow it's all going to happen the way you want.
Mm-hmm.
So we can plan through it, but we need to plan through
it. For example, when we were talking earlier about some of the things that the non-traditional couples can do, there are certain things we can do with asset titling, and then certain things we might do with proper estate planning and, you know, establishing the will or the trust and actually funding it or not funding it, whatever, you know, you have to kind of follow through on some of the estate planning that you're doing. But one of my concerns is that people hesitate in moving forward, not just because they have the fear of dying, which we do see all the time. And my mother said you could be dead tomorrow. So I always assume every single day I could be dead tomorrow. And which is why I probably love working on estates. I don't know. Creepy. But so what happens is I think that people not only worry about, you know, maybe not moving forward because they're worried about dying or not, but also, what if the relationship goes sour? So sometimes they say, gosh, I don't want to make it joint because what if, or maybe I don't want to put my partner's name on the title because what if we stop getting along? And as you said, you know, married couples get divorced and non-traditional couples kind of
get
separate.
Divorced.
Right.
They get divorced too.
But attorneys can work around that as well. I mean, that's what people have to understand. You can plan for almost anything.
But in part, that's what a cohabitation agreement is going to do. I mean, a prenuptial agreement, a cohabitation agreement, as I said, to some degree, mirror each other.
Talk about that for a minute, the cohabitation agreement.
Well, the cohabitation agreement, well drafted, is going to begin with what I brought into the relationship and what you brought into the relationship. It's then going to discuss who's going to be responsible for the rent, the mortgage, you know, who's doing what. And you want to, if they're splitting things 50-50, you want to document that. You want to put it in the agreement. And, of course, we want to then say, and by the way, you know, what about children? You know, I mean, who's going to be responsible for the children? Hey, surprise, surprise. One of the partners, you know, may be the breadwinner and the other may be the homemaker. But we want to address that in terms of how is this property going to be owned? And even though maybe I'm paying for it, the other partner, are providing a valuable service. And therefore, we should, again, document that. Now, when we've documented all that and who's going to pay for what and how this is going to go and who's going to, and then we want to say, okay, let's not talk death for a minute. Let's talk about the divorce. Who's going to be responsible for the children? Oh, my goodness, I don't want to wander off the reservation here, but some of the stuff in the book to which we referred earlier, where you have a surrogacy, and now the couple, the same-sex couple, is separating. And that surrogate is brought in as a parent, even though it was like, no, I just want you to father the child, and that's your only responsibility down the road when all this happens. That father is the biological father of that child. He's brought in court for child support. And it's just one little small example. But if we don't document this stuff, crazy things can happen. So first we want to talk about then about the divorce. The couple in Massachusetts who sued the Massachusetts and ultimately were the first couple to marry in Massachusetts, they're now in Rhode Island getting a divorce.
I think I've heard about that case as well. Folks, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is proud to present the 14th annual Heart of the Valley Antique Show on March 1st and 2nd. Come see 25 exhibitors featuring Americana, including quilts, textiles, pottery, painted, country and formal furniture, toys, and much more. The show will be held in the historic Charles Brown Ice House in the heart of historic Bethlehem. For show hours, directions, and ticket information, visit WDIY.org.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition, traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking tonight about estate planning, legal considerations for same-sex couples and non-traditional couples, which we are seeing many more of. And as we move through our conversation, we will probably get toward the last segment talking about some of the latest legal considerations for same-sex marriage as we're seeing it transpire across the United States. So right now we're kind of covering some of the implications to any non-traditional couple. I have in the studio with me this evening Kirby Upright. He's an attorney with King Spry in Bethlehem and concentrates in trusts and estates, and was actually on the forefront of working with LGBT clients and the legal considerations and the planning involved with making sure that they're protected in their relationships, their assets, and with their children, et cetera. So we, right before the break, Kirby, we're talking about the cohabitation agreement. Folks, if you do have questions, you can call live on air and give your question to us on air and we can respond. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann. She's answering calls this evening and she can write it down and bring it into the studio and we can answer it off air. So, or at least you will be off air. We will be on air and we are happy to take those questions, or through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And the number again is 610-758-8810. So the cohabitation agreement, we talked about the non-traditional couple. You recommend the cohabitation agreement, which talks about what we've brought into the relationship, what our responsibilities are financially, and probably even domestically, if that makes sense. You said sometimes a partner will be the one who's maybe earning and contributing, and the other one might be providing for the household. So there's some value in that. So you talk about in that cohabitation agreement what that means to that ongoing relationship in the event that possibly down the road there could be some separation, and it's almost like a prenup. So what else does that cohabitation agreement include?
Oh, yes, Larry, we talked about, you know, the property aspects if there's a breakup, a separation, if you will, a divorce. The other thing, of course, as we move through life is, well, we didn't have any of that. But again, we're terminal. So we need to then say, okay, who gets what and how do we do it? And, you know, at death, what rights do I have? And we know already you don't have a right of a family exemption, a right of spousal election, a right of an intestate share. We've covered all of that because we're talking about domestic partners. So we want to build into the cohabitation agreement those kinds of things, that whoever passes first, I'm going to get certain amounts. You're going to do it in the will, or you're going to do it in a maybe a trust or something, but you're going to provide for me long-term if you pass first, and likewise, I'm going to reciprocate in documents if I die first, and we're going to put that in a contract. Now, we put it in a contract. Contracts have to have consideration. Sexual favors, folks, is not consideration in Pennsylvania. So we need to have something else. But if consideration is you're going to raise my children, that's consideration. You're going to provide a good household. You're going to be a good hostess. You're going to be that actually, there is case law in Pennsylvania that those types of things are good and valuable consideration to support the contract. So we need something in there to be, you know, what do we need in a contract? Basic, you know, first year law school is an offer, acceptance, and consideration. So we need some of that. And once we get that, now we have a document. Now, notwithstanding everything I've just said, and you've mentioned it a couple times, but titling of property. There are two ways for us to have joint assets. So if we bought the house together, for instance, or the car or whatever, if in those instances we want to have that property maybe in joint names with right of survivorship. If we're talking with right of survivorship, that means I pass, that property is now yours automatically. Again, it steps past anyone who would make an estate claim outside. It goes directly to you. Okay. I don't want you to have the whole house. I want my children to have part. Then we'll title the property joint tenants in common. And what in common means is you have your half, I have my half. I can take my half and I can dispose of it through my will or otherwise as I may wish. But on the other hand, you have your half and we're separate.
Okay, so there's a lot we can do with asset titling, and some of that asset titling that Kirby just mentioned also applies even to married spouses. We see married spouses who may have joint titling, tenants with rights by entireties, or tenants in common, and sometimes that happens for estate planning. We used to see that more back in the day when we had a lower federal exemption, but it still could be used today. We have a phone call on line one. Hello? Jack?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
How can we help you?
First, I'm really enjoying the show.
Oh, Kirby great.
And Lori, thank you very much for putting on a show like this.
Great.
Timely. So the what I'm interested in is, in Kirby, in his practice, does he see an increased probability of a will contest when you're dealing with same-sex couples? Now, a couple assumptions here. One is that much of the property is not jointly owned, where mm-hmm. he already said, you know, it'll go to the other person. If a lot of the property isn't jointly owned, but there's unequal, unequal financial power in the mm-hmm. relationship, mm-hmm. and especially if the one that's worth more is estranged from their family, do you mm-hmm. see their family just come after them and try to pounce on a will that, say, is in seven figures?
Well, Jack, thanks for your call, and thanks for your kind words. Interesting question, and certainly there is case law out there dealing with will contests in those relationships. But let me just digress a second and say, first off, when we're talking about a will contest for the rest of our audience, we're talking about maybe undue influence, and that may have something to do with who has the money, you know, and who has the gold, you know, the golden rule, if you will. So, you know, undue influence, duress. Those types of issues, if dementia comes into play, they're the things that would raise an appeal of probate, or if you will, a will contest. I'm not sure that unequal assets in the relationship would have primarily much to do with that. Other than, of course, if I have the gold, and therefore I'm the golden rule. I may be able to control with the other party what may or may not happen in the relationship. Now, that having been said, we're in Pennsylvania, and we haven't gotten there yet in the discussion, Jack, but let's remember that in Pennsylvania, you're not married.
Right,
so,
sure.
So you're not married,
right. And there's no common law marriage, right? They got rid of that a couple years ago.
About 2006, we got rid of common law marriage. But we're going to litigate that for the next 40 years. Because if you were common law married in 2000, you know, you're that's going to roll forward. You didn't get divorced in 2006 somehow.
Of course,
But when we're talking about a will contest, there's got to be a basis behind the will contest that if I will win the will contest, I'm going to get something.
Right.
We're not married.
I guess, you know, this was in the perspective. So the unequal asset value, if you will, that really, let's forget about that. I don't want that to be a detractor. My only point is that a person with a significant amount of money who happens to be in a same-sex relationship and estranged from their family, what can be done besides I guess there's a lot that can be done, and that's where your firm comes in. They do things like, let's own the property jointly, let's set this up. But kind of a standard will, I was just curious whether that's going to be more open where the family comes in and says, wait, this, because, you know, money brings people out of woodwork, right?
Oh, you think?
Absolutely.
Wow.
So when somebody, you know, dies with a $5 million estate or a $10 million estate, and let's say they don't have any children, same-sex relationship, and everything is left to the partner. I mean, you can imagine that, you know, there could be siblings, parents possibly, nieces and nephews that are going to come in and argue maybe undue influence or coercion or something like that. And I was just curious in your practice if you do see an increased frequency.
Well, Jack, can I jump in here for a minute?
Sure.
Because it's more than just are you seeing it as a frequency, but would you expect, Kirby, that if a couple came in and had really good, you know, the documents are airtight, you witnessed, you saw there was no undue influence because you as an attorney with ethics and everything, you make sure that everyone's entering into this, you know, document appropriately and everything, would, in Jack's example, would a family really be able to contest the will under valid grounds if everything seemed copacetic?
Jack, when we, let me answer this two ways. First off, in my practice, which is Jack's question, I've not seen an increase. In fact, I've not seen in my practice or in reported cases in Pennsylvania a lot of will contests of domestic partnerships.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I've not seen it. Now, I was going to answer the question, and Jack, I think I understand better. You're saying, okay, the will's there, but it's the other family members who would like to turn the will upside down.
Correct.
And then inherit by virtue of intestacy.
Yes.
So it's the other family members that say, well, you're out of the room,
and we're taking the will, and the intestate statute is going to give it to siblings and parents and so on, right?
And you know what screams and yells of that is good planning, what I call and what I abide by every single time, and that is a proper will execution ceremony.
Right.
We're talking about number one. I've seen it happen, Jack. I've never sent a will in the mail, ever. Okay. I mean, you're going to be in the office.
Can't imagine.
You're going to be interviewed separate from your partner.
Right.
Okay. So there's nobody kicking, you know, partner A under the table. We're going to have it notarized. We're going to have witnesses. And so we're going to button that up as best we can.
Do you videotape ever?
Isn't that an interesting question? The answer is yes. I've heard Orphans Court litigators kind of poo-hoo that. And I'm going to be very careful in what I say because
the judges are listening.
A lot of people are listening. But we had a situation not too long ago where we didn't do the work, but another attorney did. And there was actually two wills, will A and will B, and he videotaped, or if you will, CDs, and that's, you know, today. And he got a letter from an attorney, and they were going to challenge the will. And he retained us as special counsel in this matter to deal with the litigation part. And I convinced him, there was some discussion, but I convinced him to release the CDs. They were going to get them anyway.
Right.
You know what? Those CDs went out. They saw the interview of the client and the client's responses. And obviously an attorney who was professional and responsible, not just looking for a fee, wrote back and said, fine, we're done. So I and I've had a couple of situations where I have videotaped and where it has worked. I've brought trust officers in the room. I've brought other attorneys in the, you know, where we thought that there might be, not because we thought the person had a capacity issue, but because we thought that there was other people out there who would claim there was a capacity issue. So we wanted to document. And if those kind of things come up, at the end of the day, Jack, it's important for us all to understand that, as I put it, I'm the first guy on the stand as a witness.
Right. Right.
I'm going to sit there and say, number one, I've done this more than a few times. Number two, I've met with the client, and you know, there's a checklist that we would go through, and we would determine the client understood his assets, understood the natural objects of his bounty, and was able to create, if you will, a dispositive scheme.
Right.
And if I'm satisfied, a client can articulate his assets, who are his natural objects, and he wants to give it all to, you know, the church down the road, fine. That's,
right.
You know, I'm good.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you so much for DIY for hosting such a show, and thank you very much, attorney, for taking time and doing this. And I'm not gonna take the least common denominator and ask you about Peter Carelli's will.
I was an expert witness.
Were you really?
So I probably won't tell you about that.
So you can't tell me.
Jack,
thank
you so much for calling.
Have a great night, okay?
Okay, you too. Bye.
Take care, bye.
Jeff, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back in a sec.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. I thank Jack for calling in. That was great. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. If your question's a little bit too complicated or more involved, you're welcome to email through yourfinancialchoices.com. And we can also send that question on to Kirby if you need more information as well. I do have in the studio with me this evening attorney Kirby Upright. He has a practice that is concentrated in estate and trust planning, and Kirby was on the forefront of LGBT planning, in particular getting introduced back in 2000 and finding out that there wasn't a lot of information or a lot of planning around that back then, and grabbed it by the horns, embraced it, and has been certainly an advocate for planning and helping same-sex couples, non-traditional couples, etc. So, Kirby, we've talked about a lot of topics tonight. In fact, lots of great information that applies to anyone. Everyone should have estate planning documents. Same-sex couples should have documents, non-traditional couples, heterosexual couples, married couples. So we want to make sure that you certainly have taken that away from the program as well. We also want to kind of end the segment a little bit talking about some of the legal considerations that are going on with same-sex marriage and how many states across the country are starting to have legalized same-sex marriages. We also had a question come from off-air, if I can ask this. Bill called in, and he said that you mentioned end to common law marriage in 2006. Does that apply to only estates and trust or all areas of the law?
All areas of the law.
Okay.
You know, I've said this a couple times, but perhaps I can articulate it a little better. Pennsylvania has eliminated by statute common law marriage. Now, that's going forward. But if you were in a common law relationship, which is to say that you have cohabitated and you have held yourself out publicly as husband and wife, then you are in a common law relationship. So let's say you were in a common law relationship in 1995. In 2006, you didn't somehow get divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So that relationship continues forward. Now, again, hey, folks, it's really nice to document this stuff because, you know, you can litigate this for a long way. But if you think you're in a common law relationship and you're comfortable with that, let's at least document it so they say, well, we never held ourselves out as such. And therefore, beyond the elimination of common law marriage in Pennsylvania, you're still married because you were married then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say, you know, New York eliminated common law marriage back, I think, in the 40s. But they litigated stuff like that into the 90s. If you imagine, common law married in your 20s, I mean, you're now 70s.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, of course.
Okay. So. Great. Thank you, Bill, for calling in. Phone number 610-758-8810 or questions through your financialchoices.com. So let's talk about some of the legal considerations. Let's talk about the Windsor case.
Well, let's talk about the Windsor case. And I've got to believe that the folks out there, especially on the same-sex side of things, are very interested in the Windsor case. Now, the Windsor case, basically, people like to say, well, eliminated DOMA. Well, it didn't eliminate DOMA. It eliminated Section 3 of DOMA, which essentially said that we could not require the federal government to treat one married couple differently than another married couple. So
can I interrupt you and reiterate that just because I think it's so important to understand. First of all, DOMA stands for the Defense of Marriage Act, and the Windsor case, as Kirby said, it did not defeat DOMA entirely, and there were lots of sections of that. So quite often people are confused. So just because a section of it was overturned and now there are some of those basic rights that married couples, heterosexual married couples, that might apply now to same-sex married couples, not all of the rights apply. So I apologize for interrupting.
No, that's,
so go ahead.
That's absolutely true. So what we have is now a finding of a edict, if you will, that the federal agencies can treat married couples of different orientations differently. Equal protection says, no, you can't do that. That's Section 3. Section 2 of DOMA, federal DOMA, said that each state can make its own decisions and the federal government cannot impose upon a state, Pennsylvania, for instance, to have a decision, because marriage has always been something that each state, states' rights, we had a war about that once and whatever, that they can do their, you know, they can make their own decisions. Now, what's important is, two things I guess are important. Number one, each federal agency right now is making its own rules. Example, the IRS has said that if you're married in a jurisdiction that recognizes that marriage, New York, New Jersey, you're married, and you can file joint tax returns and whatever.
Going forward, you have to file. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to, but you could file.
If you're legally married, same-sex couple, I meant.
Well, they could still file separate.
Oh, right.
But, yeah.
Sorry.
You know, okay.
But
he's good. When they come across the river, they didn't somehow get divorced. Okay, so they can still file joint in Pennsylvania. So the IRS says. IRS looks at, were you legally married in a jurisdiction that permits you to be legally married? Well, along comes Social Security. You're married in New Jersey. Ceremonial marriage, all is fine. You come across to Pennsylvania, Social Security says you're not married. You're not married. So that's different. Now, you and I talked earlier, what if you're getting Social Security and then you move to a non-recognition state? I haven't looked at that, honestly, but the sense would be that you didn't somehow all of a sudden forfeit the benefits that you previously were getting. Mm-hmm. So that would be a question. But Windsor simply said the federal government, but it has nothing to do with Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania, we got a long way to go here. And in Pennsylvania, you're still not married. You're going to file separate returns and everything else yours. I have clients that got married in New York and they've come back to Pennsylvania. And they're here in Pennsylvania for other reasons, and that's fine. But they understand that they're not married in Pennsylvania. Now, very important, and you have a question. Maybe you want to go
to
that first.
I do, if you don't mind, Kirby.
Go to the question because we have time.
Caller commented that it's a great show, so thank you so much again for coming. Regarding titling, when it comes to a will, can you put in a specific request to keep children from contesting what is left to the partner? And then the extra comment was the children have a portion left to them as well in the will.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a good lawyer answer, yes and no. Okay. What you're talking about is what we call an interim clause, a no contest clause. In Pennsylvania, if you have a good case, if you have probable cause, There's a statute in Pennsylvania that says that interim clause will not work, that no contest is not enforceable. No contest clause is if you've challenged this will, you're out. You don't get anything if you lose. Pennsylvania wants to keep the doors of the courtroom open for people who have appropriate issues. So if you have a probable issue, you don't have to win the case, but if you were at least legitimate, you're not going to lose. The better answer there is giving someone something, and if you don't contest the will, maybe you get more. A negative bequest. I love my daughter dearly, but you know, I have given her X, Y, and Z during life and whatever. I have clients that have been very, very successful. And, the son got the business during a lifetime. Matter of fact, I have several clients that way now that I think about it. And the son, they acknowledge they're not getting anything in the will. There's no animosity. They love their kids dearly. But the son got the business. He's gone forward the business. And one example I'm thinking of is two daughters. And they'll divide the estate. And frankly, there's some life insurance and a couple trusts and whatever involved in all of that. So I guess the answer is that, yes, you can put in a no contest clause in the will. It may not be enforceable, but there are other ways to work with that in terms of, as I said, a negative bequest, a provision that, you know, if you do contest, then you get, for whatever reason, you don't have to, you know, maybe you're going to get less, or I'm going to give you more, and some of those sort of things. The other thing to do, I was going to say you could use a trust, but if you're using a revocable trust, that's a will substitute today, and the statutes are kind of combining wills and trusts and treating them much the same. So some of that same language would come to play.
Kirby, thank you, caller, for the question. We appreciate it. Kirby, we have just a couple minutes left. So I want to give you a minute to kind of give us some last comments about what you want listeners to take away that we maybe haven't already mentioned. And then I want to give you the opportunity to tell us how to reach you.
Well, what I want listeners to take away is that the U.S. Supreme Court case Windsor is a good case. It's the law of the land at the federal level. Pennsylvania is going to be confusing for a number of years because Pennsylvania has its own DOMA. And for people who think that some of these cases, notwithstanding the fact that Attorney General Kane has said she will not enforce DOMA in Pennsylvania, it's going to be enforced. And the legislature, in my opinion, is not going to change that. We are still a very conservative state. It's kind of funny because if you look around us, the only state that surrounds us that does not have legalized same-sex marriage is Ohio. Everyone else does. Nonetheless, you're not married. Same-sex couples are not married in Pennsylvania. I don't care if they went to New York or New Jersey, Maryland, whatever, to get married. You're not married in Pennsylvania. You're going to file separate returns. There is no, you know, tenants by the entirety's ownership of property. There are no inheritance rights, as we discussed earlier, et cetera. So you've got to plan through that.
Got to do the good planning. How do people reach you if they want to?
Well, Kirby Upright. I'm at King Spry, and from where we sit right now, we can see the building over on the other hill over in Bethlehem. And I'm at King Spry, and we're there every day, and that's 610-332-0390. Again, King Spry at 610-332-0390. And Lori, I'm glad we've had some listeners call in. This has been a real treat, and I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
It's been a treat for me, too. I really appreciate it. It's been a great show. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Judy Ann, for being here. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. I'm going to be taking text questions next week. The lines will be open for you. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.